This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Every child on the face of the planet is depending on us. As we speak, if we do not receive the funds that we need, just in the four countries facing famine, 600,000 children face death.
That's David Beasley, Executive Director of the World Food Program. He says donors must do more to meet emergency humanitarian funding appeals as world hunger increases. Details coming up. Also, the African Union Summit opened today in Addis Ababa. And in Nigeria, trenches are being dug around the University of Maiduguri to protect against Boko Haram militant attacks. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the African Union Summit opened today in Addis Ababa. AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat says peace and security continue to worry member states more than ever. The Associated Press quotes him as saying the situation in South Sudan, Somalia, Libya and the Central African Republic are among the major issues, along with shaky peace accord in Mali, fragile relations between Djibouti and Eritrea, and problems in the DRC, Burundi and Guinea-Bissau. He also says the African Union and the United Nations will hold a joint summit to cooperate on peace and security on the continent. The UN warns today that world hunger is on the rise again, reversing 25 years of progress. The warning comes on the opening day of the Food and Agriculture Organization conference in Rome, the agency's biggest meeting that's held every 2 years. About 1,000 people are attending the six-day event. This year's theme is Zero Hunger, turning commitment into action to achieve sustainable development goal number 2. FAO Director General Jose Graziano da Silva addressed today's opening session.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish I could announce here today some good news regarding the global fight against hunger, as I did in our last conference in 2015. But unfortunately, that's not the case. Preliminary data available for this year indicate that the number of unnourished people in the world has increased to rise again. The final number will be only available next September when we will launch the State of Food Security and Nutrition, the SOFI 2007. But unfortunately, these are not good news. I'm sure that you are not entirely surprised for this. Early this year, famine was declared in some parts of Africa, particularly in South Sudan. And by the time the famine is declared, it means that thousands of people have already died from hunger. Alerts of the high risk of famine were also issued for northeast Nigeria, Somalia, and Yemen. Nearly 20 million people, we estimate, that are heavily affected in those countries. And this is happening less than 2 years after we agreed to eradicate hunger by 2030.
The FAO chief says political will alone is not enough to solve the problem. He says it must be turned into action.
Today, conflicts and the impact of climate change pose increased challenge to our global efforts to eradicate hunger and extreme poverty. FAO currently has identified 19 countries in a protected crisis situation. All those 19 countries are engaged in internal conflicts and violence, often combined with a diverse climatic event. When linked conflict and drought is the worst scenario for food security. And that is unfortunately happened. Almost 6% of the people suffering from hunger in the world live in areas affected by conflict and impact of climate change.
He says the problems are driving the migrant and refugee crisis.
The number of refugees and internally displaced persons has doubled from 2007 to 2015 to nearly 60 million people. And you see every day morning in the news how Italy is particularly suffering from this. Peace is, of course, the key to end this crisis. But we cannot wait for peace to take action. There is much we can do to fight hunger during conflicts and protect the crisis.
That's FAO Director General Jose Graziano da Silva. Also addressing the Rome conference was David Bisley, Executive Director of the World Food Programme. He outlined the current prospects of Achieve Zero Hunger.
Sustainable Development Goal number 2, end world hunger by 2030. It has zero chance of succeeding in the atmosphere that we have in the world today. 13 of our countries out of the 80 that the World Food Program is engaged in, of 13 of our highest expenditure countries, 10 of them are man-made conflicts. With all the technological advancements in the world today, healthcare advancements, programs and policies passed all over the world, governments doing their best, and yet we've got more war and conflict and brokenness and loneliness than any time period I know in my life. We've got more fluid wealth than any time period in the history of the world. We're spending more money on military than any time period in the history of the world, but yet just a small percentage of that we can end world hunger.
Bisley says it is very difficult to deal with all the current humanitarian crisis.
Yemen, South Sudan, Nigeria, Somalia, Syria, Iraq, just to name 6 of the 10 man-made conflicts. 4 million people per day that we're feeding, working together with IFAD and FAO in Syria. 2.4 million per day in Somalia. 2.1 million people per day in South Sudan, and that changes by the hour. When we have the access, we can get it done. But when we don't have the access and we have conflict, we can't achieve the objectives that we so dear want to do. We've got so many complex situations all over the world. It seems like we're running around everywhere. And I say maybe we should slow down and back up a little and focus just on 2 or 3 big conflicts. That's what I'm asking the ambassadors and the foreign service departments and the leaders of the free world to just focus and end just a few. If you'll just end just a few, we have the resources to achieve the objective of zero hunger. We're ready. We're prepared. We're collaborating.
The WFP chief called on donor countries to step up and meet the funding appeals that UN aid agencies have made. Only a fraction of those appeals have been funded.
Every child on the face of the planet is depending on us. As we speak, if we do not receive the funds that we need, just in the 4 countries facing famine, 600,000 children face death. 30 million people don't know where the next meal is coming in the 4 countries facing famine. 20 million on the brink of starvation. Children are going to die if we don't get our act together as leaders of this world. There are those of you in this room that have stepped up in amazing ways, and then those of you in this room that haven't stepped up in ways you should. You know who I'm talking about. They're your neighbors, the wars in your home areas. I'm asking you to do more to help your neighbors. I think there's been some concern that the United States may cut some of the funding for humanitarian efforts. I can tell you with great confidence, I have no doubt that the United States will not turn its back. It will stand strong.
That's WAFP Executive Director David Beasley. The Food and Agriculture Organization Conference in Rome continues through July 8th. Italy, France, and Germany have agreed to write a code of conduct regarding migrant rescues on the Mediterranean. AFP reports it's an attempt to coordinate and regulate charities that operate rescue vessels. Those boats and ships operate in the same waters as the Italian Coast Guard and European Union rescue vessels. More than 83,000 migrants have been rescued on the Mediterranean so far this year. Most have been brought to Italy, which is calling on other nations to open their ports to migrants. Italy says its resources are being overwhelmed. Some NGOs say it would be much more difficult to bring migrants to other countries. Nearly 2,200 people have died trying to make the journey from Libya to Italy. Reuters reports suspected Boko Haram militants killed 9 people last night and abducted dozens more in an attack in southern Niger. The local mayor and a journalist say the attackers rode camels into the village of Ngalwe around 9 p.m. local time and abducted between 30 and 40 people, mostly women and children. Meanwhile, in Nigeria, local media report trenches are being dug around the University of Maiduguri to protect against Boko Haram militant attacks. The university in Borno State is a frequent target of suicide bomb attacks. Reports say the trenches will be 27 kilometers long and cost nearly $160,000 to dig. You were listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The African Union summit opened today in Addis Ababa. The UN warns that world hunger is on the rise again. And Italy, France, and Germany have agreed to write a code of conduct regarding migrant rescues on the Mediterranean. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. One out of five of the world's nearly 170 million child laborers are in sub-Saharan Africa. That's according to the International Labour Organization, which also says tens of thousands of those children are sold to human traffickers by their parents or kidnapped outright. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on what some U.S. and Ghanaian activists are doing to address the problem in Ghana's Lake Volta region.
In New York, a crowd of models, fashion designers, cosmetic executives, and others gather for an event in the city's chic Soho district. But this event has nothing to do with the latest styles, trends, or fads. They're here to learn about human trafficking and to support Challenging Heights of Ghana. It's a grassroots group dedicated to rescuing the estimated 21,000 child slaves who labor in the country's vast fishing industry on Lake Volta.
Because if there's one person in the world that's not free, none of us is free.
That's the fashion model and anti-trafficking activist Monica Watkins. She's co-founder and director of Beauty for Freedom, which is sponsoring this event.
We really build a bridge between the industries of fashion, beauty, technology, the arts, and entertainment, and we build this bridge of education and support for an end to human trafficking.
Watkins admits that building that bridge is not always easy.
Because for the most part, the fashion and the beauty industries have been very insular, and quite selfish. You know, a lot of people from the fashion industry have not done their due diligence in giving back to causes. What I want to do is take them to task, and we're starting to make a crack in that armor, you know, getting people to really open their eyes and, like, understand what human trafficking is and look beyond just the work that they do to the human spirit and the connectivity between what they have and what they can give.
Watkins got her first real taste of the suffering caused by human trafficking in 2010 in Haiti, where she was an earthquake relief volunteer. She met a girl who had lost both parents in the quake. Soon afterwards, the child was kidnapped and sold into sex slavery. Watkins says the girl was only 14 years old, but looked 30.
That really broke this dam in my heart, you know, and I was just like, I cannot sit back and do nothing. You know, I have to do something.
43-year-old James Kofi Annan is the founder and director of Challenging Heights. When he was 6 years old, his parents sold him to a slave trafficker to work on Lake Volta. They needed the money for food. Kofi Annan managed to escape when he was 13. He went on to attend school and then university. He garnered a master's degree in finance and became a bank manager. But the memory of slavery was seared into him.
Through all these things, I've been able to empower myself and heal from that. But I still have some remnants of those flashes of pains and torture coming back, especially when I come across incidences that reminds me of my childhood.
In 2007, Kofi Annan gathered his savings, resigned from the bank, and founded Challenging Heights.
For me, it's a personal mission. I feel like each time I'd rescued a child from slavery, I feel I've rescued myself, because I didn't have anyone to rescue me when I was a child working as a victim. I didn't have any medical support. I didn't have anyone to speak for me. I didn't have anybody to give me food, to assure me of education. I didn't have all those things. So as I provide these support for these children, I feel like I'm providing support for myself. You know, so that is the kind of passion and enthusiasm that I bring to bear in the work I do. So I feel like there's a mission, and that mission will end when the last child is rescued.
Much of Kofi Annan's work at Challenging Heights is creating partnerships with government, law enforcement, NGOs, local communities, and rescuers. Over the past 12 years, Challenging Heights has rescued over 1,600 children.
I'm happy to announce that we've made a lot of progress. You know, it's just that the pace is slow. And remember, you know, these children, though they are resilient, a lot of them die. They are forced to work long hours and with diseases that are untreated. So it means that the more we delay, the more we lose them.
Today, Vincent Lin is a rescue and recovery specialist who uses commando techniques to raid slave camps and free children. Prior to that, he was a corporate security expert and bodyguard for high-level executives. One day in 2013, he visited a safe house in Ghana where he met some kids Challenging Heights had just saved.
That look in their eye was like a thousand-yard stare. It looked like a shark's eyes. And they were emotionless and cold. It's completely dead. That's why it's kind of like a shark's eyes, you know. Mm-hmm. And depending on, you know, if they've suffered torture or psychological damage in any way, scarring, you know, it haunts you. It was shocking what horrific barbarity that they do to these children, and it makes your blood boil. But at the same time, you know, you just kind of get through it and realize that there's more work to be done.
Indeed, there is an immense amount of work to be done. According to the UN, 1.2 million children are trafficked every year, and it's estimated that traffickers make about $150 billion every year in profit. The human cost for its victims, however, is beyond measure. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
The Atlantic Council, a U.S. think tank, has issued a new report on American strategy in Libya and Egypt. The report comes from a council task force co-chaired by former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. The report says because nations are backing competing factions in Libya, it is difficult to find a political solution to the conflict. Stephen Grand is executive director of the task force. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy first about what the U.S. should do in Libya.
There are various kinds of U.S. intervention that are possible, and I'm not advocating for the kind of military intervention that we've seen the U.S. engage in other parts of the region. What we do think the U.S. can do is exercise leadership. Leadership in terms of how we begin to bring that conflict towards an end. And when we were looking at Libya in the report, we talked about the importance of a united international community working to support the government of national accord in Tripoli and trying to sideline or marginalize forces that would undermine their authority, and hope that over time, in that way, you can reconstitute an effective Libyan state.
The report praised the role of civil society in Tunisia in averting a civil war and in a peaceful transition to democracy. The opposite had taken place in Egypt, where the civil society is severely constrained. What should the U.S. do to encourage the Egyptian regime to open up the political space?
What we really highlight most of all in the report is the tremendous dynamism that you see at the grassroots level in many countries in the region. It's a very young region where about two-thirds of the population in most states are under 30. They tend to be better educated than their parents, more connected to the rest of the world, more connected to each other, and they tend to be more empowered and entrepreneurial. And everywhere we went and everything we heard about suggests a younger generation that's not willing to wait for change, that is keen to create a region that furthers their own values and interests, and to create that through their own sweat and toil. That's promising. Those are what we call possible green shoots of change, and they need to be nurtured. But they can only be nurtured if the security environment is conducive to that, and if the political environment is conducive to that. So that's why we place such an emphasis on the civil wars and winding them down, but it's also why we place such an emphasis on governments doing the right thing, responding to this younger generation that has both heightened expectations of their governments, but also heightened capabilities to help those governments address the many social problems and economic problems that they face. And these governments should not be afraid of their societies, but should see them as partners in building a new society and new countries.
Experts are concerned that Egyptian President Sisi is emboldened by the Trump administration's focus on counterterrorism at the expense of pluralism and political reform. Is there any recommendations to correct such imbalance?
Well, I think it's very much in our interest, and it's in the interest of these states, to allow pluralism, to recognize that they are not going to succeed over the long term in governing if they continue to try to put civil society back into a box. The youth of the region have experienced the Arab Spring. It was not successful, but they know now that they have a voice. And governments, in some cases, are listening.
That was Stephen Grand, Executive Director of the Atlantic Council's Task Force for Middle East Strategy. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.